Red Hot China.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Talk about growth. In the first quarter, China's economy was meteoric. Expectations were high, but the results were even higher. China's GDP was 11.1%. It was fueled in large part by exports, which have sparked trade tensions with Washington. Inflation jumped to 3.3%, the fastest pace in 2 years. Also, the huge growth in the country's economy stoked concerns the government might raise interest rates. You can guess where that led to. Asian markets plunged as a result. In Tokyo today, the Nikkei slid 295 points. European markets were also down as well this morning. On Wall Street yesterday, it was a record breaker for the Dow, creating a new all-time closing high. The Dow powered up 30 points to 12,803. A different story for the Nasdaq, which lost 6 points. It's at 2510. The S&P eased up a point to 1472. Right now, the price of oil is at $63.20 a barrel. Iraq could be sitting on oil reserves that are double earlier estimates, that according to reports in the British press this morning. But some analysts are skeptical. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The international consultancy IHS has carried out what it calls the most comprehensive study of Iraqi oil since the US-led invasion. The results are startling. Iraq's reserves are said to be phenomenal, 100 billion barrels bigger than expected. The consultants claim that Iraq could double production to 4 million barrels a day within the next 5 years, if only the security situation improved. But Chris Grabowski of Petroleum Review is not persuaded. He has his doubts about the study, given the horrific violence in Iraq.
Their ability to do much of a survey in such a difficult circumstance seems to me... I would need persuading that they'd really been able to do a significant survey.
Even if it was significant, he says, we're still a long way from knowing for sure that Iraq's reserves are much more abundant than previously believed. Certainty only comes with drilling. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
There's growing concern about better emergency notification on college campuses following the Virginia Tech shooting. Andrea Gardner has a story of one company's technological solution.
For the past 2 years, the company OmniAlert has been trying to sell colleges its E2 campus system. It enables a school to send a text message simultaneously to all students with a cell phone, notifying them of an emergency or other campus news. OmniAlert's Nick Gustafson believes text messaging is the best way to reach students, since about 90% of them carry cell phones. The service costs $1 per student per year. Before the Virginia Tech shootings, only 30 colleges had subscribed to the service.
There's been a lot of early adopters on board who have had to convince their administrations that this is the way to go, and now this issue has taken front and center. So the response in the last couple of days has literally been the phone off the hook.
In the past few days, he says some 650 colleges have come calling. I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. By Medtronic, applauding the many contributions of America's volunteers. You can find volunteer opportunities in your community today by visiting volunteermatch.org. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
Identity theft is a growing problem. BioPassword is a new security software based on the idea of keystroke recognition. Jonathan Richards is a reporter for the Times of London and has written about this program. I asked Jonathan how BioPassword works.
Well, it works by measuring the speed at which you type. So it asks you to enter your password and login details 9 times, and that enables it to take a sample of your typing speed.
Now, you kind of took this device on a test drive. What happened?
Well, I was keen to do two things. I was keen to try and type in someone else's password, having watched them enter it, to see how I could go trying to be them. And then I wanted to them to do the same for me. So this guy, for instance, told me his password was Kidder, and I watched him very closely type it 3 times and then tried to do the same, and it denied me access. And then in turn, I set up a password and told him to watch me type it in and replicate that as best he could. And of course, the system turned him down as well. What they then explain is that it's using very precise measurements of the keystrokes that you make. It measures the length of time for which each key in your password is depressed, and it also measures the length of time between strokes. And what you realize is that most of us type in a very consistent and a very idiosyncratic way.
So what happens when your typing style varies from your profile, like you're sleepy because you just woke up?
You're sleepy, right. They have a few little measures to catch that. If after a couple of goes, it seems you're not typing the way it expects you to type, it will ask some additional security questions.
Now, this software is new, but the technology has been around for a while, hasn't it?
That's right. The similar kind of technique was used during the Second World War by Morse code operators to identify whether this message was coming from an ally or perhaps to someone posing as an ally. In the 1980s, it was formalized, I gather, by Stanford University, and so this, I understand, is the first attempt to at least commercialize in any case.
So if this technology has been around since the 80s, why do you think it hasn't been used more?
Look, I don't know. It's one of the great questions. I think possibly the reason there's been a lot more interest in it of late is as a result of the increasing incidence of online fraud. Banks are increasingly looking around for ways to prevent this kind of thing happening.
How much is the software?
The system works, they need a central server if you're going to use it, deploy it as a bank. So I think that costs about $34,000. And then it's a sort of per user subscription fee, which is $1.15.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan. Appreciate your time.
That's a pleasure.
Times of London reporter Jonathan Richards. Finally, there are about 1 billion PC users worldwide. Microsoft wants to double that by 2015. So the company is cutting software prices to governments in the developing world that provide free computers to school children. Bill Gates announced the program in Beijing today. A stripped-down version of Windows and other software will be sold for $3. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.